People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, People of Note, and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition. Let me introduce my guest to you. His name, Peter Finlayson, renowned for pioneering South African Pinot, as well as putting the Walker Bay wine region on the map. He was the first winemaker in the Huemulanade Valley and has been at Bouchard Finlayson since its inception in 1989. His dedication to making the finest wines is illustrated across the wine range, with emphasis on Pinot Noirs. He has a lovely quote, and he says, "Take our flagship Bouchard Finlayson Galpin Peak Pinot Noir, for example. The cultivar is like opera. When it's great, it's pure seduction, almost hedonistic. There's no middle road." A true quote, I think. Peter, welcome.
Hello, Rodney. Morning.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
All the way from Hermanus is where you actually stay, you were telling me, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I've lived in Hermanus for nearly 40 years, yeah.
Okay.
And
I want to know, just, it seems as though this has been your life, which is true in a sense, isn't it? Making wine has been your life.
Making wine has been my life. I trained as a winemaker at Stellenbosch University, where I trained as a wine chemist, and that was just a means to an end. It was the ticket I needed to get established in the wine industry, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is a wine chemist, just as a matter of interest?
Wine chemist, the study of wine is known as enology. And the chemistry of wine is, of course, historically it's alchemy, and the last, let's say, 50 years it's been analyzed, dissected, and there's a good understanding of what happens biologically through the yeast, etc., and microflora. And then the change in chemical balance in wines is a complex system. And wine is different to other forms of art, which are complete when they are recorded, whereas wine is always changing once it's bottled, and that makes it perhaps not an art. I regard it as a sport.
Let alone when it's opened.
When it's open, it creates more sport.
Peter, did you always want to get into the wine industry? If you think back, being a farmer, has that always appealed to you?
The difficulty is that you don't develop a taste for wine until you reach adolescence, really. So as a school kid, most of my time I spent reading Game Ranger books and books of the bush, and that was basically left that seed of wanting to be a veterinarian. But my university studies did not allow me to enter veterinary school. They were troubled by rugby and things in miniskirts, etc. Yes.
As with all young men,
yes,
I suppose.
As we're meant to be.
Yes. Where were you born, Peter?
I was born in Cape Town. My parents had two farms. They had the farm in Constantia, which is today the Waldorf School, next to Peddlers on the Bend. And we also had the farm Hartenberg in Stellenbosch, or Kullenhof. My father was a medical doctor, and in those days, many doctors enjoyed farming as a sideline interest and a wonderful hobby, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh. And so it was that business of growing up on a farm, in a sense, that gave you this feel for the bush and for the land and for the wine.
Yes, no doubt. I heard lots of wine talk and understood. You know, the early winemakers in the Cape that we were linked with would have been ex-Italian POWs, and they ran the little winery in Kendall Road, Constantia, which was mainly just for the offcuts from table grapes being produced in Constantia. But we also had a winery on the farm in Stellenbosch where hopefully good wines were made, and they were sold to Castle Wine and Brandy Company in those days, yeah.
Mm, gosh.
So yes, and everything in life then was, and it's about, we even had jackal on the farm in Stellenbosch in those days, so it was Missile Yard Cut and jackal and
so much more rural than
so
today.
Much, yeah, absolutely rural, and an occasional snake that got beaten to death or or frightened me to death, and certainly in touch with the land and the soil all the time, yeah.
So then when you left school, you wanted to go. It's interesting that you did this wine chemist thing, because that obviously gives you this scientific base as well, let alone the hands-on and then the soil base.
Yeah, I was fairly stubborn. I studied chemistry at school, and I failed it in matric. And then I went to university and studied it and got a major in chemistry. Now, how stupid is that?
Yes. Well, it just shows maybe school just didn't inspire you that much until you got into the real thing.
Well, we better not get onto that subject.
And yeah. So let's go to your first piece of music now, Peter. And Beethoven, you'll be in my good books immediately for choosing Beethoven. I see one of his cello sonatas. Tell me why you've chosen this.
I love the cello. I think it's an instrument of enormous emotion. It can be played in so many ways. It can be played jazz style, but finding cello pieces in classical music which are lively and inspiring is to me a wonderful discovery. Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, so I'd rather listen to six cellos playing New York, New York than hearing Frank Sinatra sing it. Yeah.
Many people would be cross with you for saying that.
Well, he has a great voice, but the mood that comes from that experience is just stunning. Yeah.
Have you heard those recordings of the 12 cellists of the Berlin Philharmonic?
No, I've heard six. Well, we've had six cellos actually in the winery at the farm at Bushard.
Oh, have you?
Yes. I can't remember who it was. It was some years ago.
Probably Peter Martens and company.
Could be.
Called Cellissimo. There was a group called Cellissimo.
Okay.
But
yeah,
you must try and get a recording of
the
12 cellos of the Berlin Philharmonic.
Yeah.
It's a lush sound. But here is the Largo movement of Beethoven's cello sonata, and we'll tell you all about it afterwards. Music by Beethoven, an excerpt from one of his cello sonatas there, and the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, here on Fine Music Radio, Peter Finlayson, who is with me here in the studio to talk about wine. Peter's been at Bouchard Finlayson since its inception in 1989, with an emphasis on Pinot Noir. We'll start talking about wine in a moment, Peter, but I'm still interested in your progress towards becoming this established wine person that you did. So when you finished and you got your chemist degree,
yes,
did you quite quickly get into the wine trade after that?
It wasn't an immediate process in the sense that I worked for a nursery in Wellington to get a closer understanding of viticulture. And I did a season of grafting and nursery development in 1974. And then in 1975, I organized to go to Germany to the wine school at Geisenheim mm-hmm. on the Rhine. And that was a turning moment in my life, in the sense that there I met tradition in the true sense. Mm-hmm. Wineries that were 700 years old cultures deeply entrenched in that part of the world, and gave me exposure to other wines from other parts of the world, from, for instance, Italy, which play a major role in the world of wine, which is not prominent in South Africa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
And as you say, one forgets just how old those winemaking traditions are in Europe compared to what we do here in South Africa.
Yes, some of them have continued in families, the same families. You take the Antonori group in Italy, for instance. They go way back to the Medici family, and they're real aristocrats, yeah.
So that must, as a young man, that must have been fascinating for you to be in that environment there in Germany and working with those sorts of cultivars and those tastes that are unique to Germany.
And lodgings in the state winery in the Rheingau, I was sort of mentored by a fellow called Dr. Hans Ambrosi. Hans Ambrosi had been in South Africa for some 10 years at the research station in Stellenbosch, and he had lodged with a lady called Frenzy Flockerman. And Frenzy Flockerman happened to be my lunch provider when I was a student at Stellenbosch. And when I indicated after my studies that I was wanting to go to Germany, she said, "I will write to Hans and I will tell Hans he must look after you."
Good.
And that's a fascinating link. Yeah.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. Did you know him when he was in South Africa, or it was
I only met him. Yeah.
In Germany.
Yes.
And then how long were you there? How long were you over?
I was there for a full summer. Arrived in March and left at the end of October. There's not much to do there in winter, and plus I was missing the Cape sunshine.
By
that time.
Were you there during a harvest then?
I was there during a full growing season and a harvest, yeah. And I was linked to the wine school, but I also did what they call Schwarzarbeit, which was working on certain days in wineries and Saturdays helping somebody bottle and that sort of thing, and visiting. I was given an honorary lectureship in the German Wine Academy while I was there, because I was English-speaking, and this Wine Academy was a marketing tool for the German wine industry. Yeah. And that was also great fun. I met people like the editor of Mad Magazine, who came to the Wine Academy.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Wow. I used to be a huge fan of Mad Magazine years ago.
Very clever. What is his name? William Gaines, I think
Russia
it was.
Yeah. By this stage, when you were working in Germany, were you a qualified, for want of a better word, wine taster?
Yes, I was a qualified wine taster. I think myself and our family have been very blessed with good wine tasting ability, and mm-hmm. that we all claim came from my mother, who was an instinctive cook who never used a recipe, just
really?
Got on with it. Yeah.
And the sort of palate thing continued through the family.
Yes. I got a niece who's in the wine business, married to a Swiss winemaker. I got a son who's a winemaker. A nephew, my oldest brother, was a winemaker.
So it really is a family industry.
It was never planned that way, but it just evolved that way, yes.
And then when you came back to South Africa, to the wonderful weather here, as you said, Peter, what did you do then? What was your next move?
My first project was to assist in the winery at the family farm in Hartenberg, 1976. But sadly, the farm business was on the skids at that stage. interest rates in South Africa, people might be horrified to reflect that they had reached 25%.
Gosh, what year was that then?
1975. A very difficult time for businesses to survive. And in 1976, the business was closed. Then I moved on to the fledgling Boschendal Winery, where I was for 3 years in the early stages and development at the winery at Boschendal.
Would you call yourself then a winemaker?
I was assistant to the winemaker, and that was a period of development again. Mm-hmm. And after that, I moved at the end of 79, moved to Hamilton Russell, to Himalnada Valley, which was not on the map at that stage. And nobody really wanted to take up the offering of the post in Hermanus from the wine industry because it had no track record.
Oh, isn't it interesting when you think of it today?
Well, I looked at it from the viewpoint that if you can grow grapes in Germany, you can grow them in Hermanus.
It's very practical.
Just a question of management.
Yes, and true.
Very quickly got on to pressing the right buttons, and we produced a really interesting Pinot Noir in 1981.
Was Hamilton Russell then already established?
Not as a winemaking, no. He had planted some vineyards, he had two properties, and Tim Hamilton Russell was resident in Johannesburg at the time.
Okay.
I had this wonderful opportunity of being captain of my own ship at a very, very young age, and the opportunity to develop and get the show on the road.
Yeah. Mm. And the area, Walker Bay, it's called, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, Walker Bay is the region, yes.
Is the region.
And the wards are Himalanada, three wards in the Himalanada.
Okay, so in other words, that whole area was just not really on the map as such in those days.
Not at all. It was it was poor man's farming land when we kicked off. Land was very cheap there. Today it's at an absolute premium.
Gosh.
And I describe it as sheep's millies and baboons, yes.
Okay, well, soon we're going to arrive at Bouchard Finlayson and talk about Pinot Noir.
Mm.
But what is your next piece of music here? A Schubert sonata, the famous Arpeggioni sonata, much loved by everyone, but have you got a special reason for choosing it, Peter?
Again, it's not the cello, it's the double bass. And double bass used in not a plucking form, but also, I just took a love to this piece of music and it stuck in my mind, yeah. Thank you.
Music by Schubert there, part of the Arpeggione Sonata. And another choice of my guest, the second choice of my guest, Peter Finlayson. And he is at the Bouchard Finlayson Wine Estate, the valley down there, the Himmelinada Valley. Yes, I get confused. So we talked about the Himmelinada Valley, where there's Hamilton Russell, Bouchard Finlayson.
The Himmelinada Valley is in three wards, officially. The Himmelinada Valley is where Hamilton Russell, Bouchard Finlayson are, and there's some wines made by Hannes Storm. Mm-hmm. Then just above us, we have Upper Himmelinada Valley, and it's another ward, and that has Newton Johnson, Restless River, trying to think who else, Spookfontein. And then further on, you have Himmelinada Ridge. And Himmelinada Ridge is wineries like Creation, Domaine des Dieux, then certain other, there's this Mount Babylon. There are probably about 10 in total.
Is it I hope this is not a stupid question, but is it a good area to grow wine, bearing in mind that it didn't initially have much traction, as they say these days?
It's proven to be a fantastic area to grow wine, and it's gained a lot of respect, and in particularly for the grape called Pinot Noir.
So, Peter, this is my question. Yes. What is the fascination with Pinot Noir, which seems really to have come to dominate your life? Am I right in saying that?
Yes, Pinot Noir is a curveball for many winemakers, and it takes time to really understand the grape. One of my descriptions for Pinot Noir is that it's actually a white wine grape variety, but only makes reds under very special conditions. Raises eyebrows, etc. In contrast with varieties that we are familiar with, the heavy reds, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinotage, Shiraz, whatever, they make big red wines under most conditions. But worldwide, Pinot Noir is limited in its location suitability. Originally, Pinot Noir, the red wines come from Burgundy, and the Burgundians for a long time stated that it will not be a success anywhere else in the world. But if you go back to France, you'll have three times the amount of Pinot Noir grown in Champagne, where it is only the clear free-run juice from the first press that is used in about 70% of the blend of Champagne with Chardonnay. But 200 kilometers south, you've got Burgundy, 60-kilometer long stretch with 4,500 producers, where the Pinot Noirs are graded into different levels of quality, and with only 2% being Grand Cru quality and only 10% being Premier Cru quality, which means 88% is either Village or generic Pinot Noir. So it means historically it was only that little peak of the pyramid which was really making great red wine. Knowledge has been exported in all fashions worldwide. You have pockets in different parts of the world where Pinot Noir is now being produced very successfully, amongst others, the west coast of California, Oregon. In other words, when you're in the fog belt in California, the cooler areas, so that colder influence from the ocean, as we have in Amanus, gives us that eligibility in Himmelinada Valley. And New Zealand's successful, and pockets. So it's limited in its scope of the right place to be.
Is it possible, Peter, to say who invented Pinot Noir? Was it, how did it come into being?
Pinot Noir is one of those interesting grape varieties which does not have genetic parents, genetic parents, as you will have in most grape varieties. They can be traced back to where they were cross-pollinated with other varieties. So it is said to be ancient, perhaps originating and just being selected from after the last ice age in Europe,
Oh, my goodness. Mm. That's an awfully long time ago, surely.
Well, 13,000 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
Not so far back.
Well, actually. True, if you think of the greater scheme of things, no. All right, Peter, let's have another piece of music. And this, I don't know what this piece, Gabriela's Song. Tell me what that's all about.
Gabriela's Song is a wonderful piece of music. It's originally originated in Swedish. And it's sung by this Amira Velihagen. Amira is a child protege. She won the Dutch talent contest at the age of 9, and she moved to South Africa last year in April at the age of 14, and living in Potchefstroom, I believe, going to school in South Africa. And she has sung all over the world, and in my mind, just one of the most beautiful voices. And she sings this song ever so well. Yeah.
Zat en dieten biedt, af den hemel je ouder in nood. Ja, wie schepnen had je al even ouder tier in je hoofd. Maar je leven zal je weer. Ja, wie schepnen had je.
Gabriel's song, sung by Amira Velihagen. And the first for me, Peter, and I hear what you mean. You said she's got one of the most beautiful voices you've heard, and she's right here in South Africa.
Exactly. Well, yes. And Amira, growing up in Holland and being a scholar in Holland, apparently it would have been illegal for her to leave school to go and perform or take absence from school. And I think that's one of the reasons why she came to South Africa. She can go to Las Vegas from here, or to Hong Kong or Berlin.
And is she doing that sort of thing?
She's doing that sort of thing, yeah.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Well, I think you might have introduced a lot of people to a new voice.
Well, it's a stunning voice, yeah.
Okay.
And this tiny little lovely lady, she is. But let's watch her progress, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, my guest on People of Note this week is Peter Finlayson, a Pinot Noir specialist, pioneering Pinot Noir, and at the Bouchard Finlayson Wine Estate in Hermanus, or thereabouts. We were talking about that area. I'd like to just talk to you, Peter, since you're the expert, about Pinot Noir. I mean, what makes a good Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir has been accused of being capricious and the heartbreak grape, etc.
Yes.
It can be overdone, and that is when it penalizes the winemaker. Too much tannic extraction makes it metallic. too little overproduction in the vineyard makes it weak in its composition. So it's that fine understanding, like music, of getting the exact harmony in the wine, and that is as much the tease and what takes time to develop one's sophistication in the grape. And my reason for saying it's like opera is that nobody wants to listen to mediocre opera. It doesn't work.
Yes.
And for folks who get introduced to Pinot Noir and they buy inexpensive examples, the chances are they're listening to mediocre opera. So
I'm going to read your quote again, Peter, which I read at the beginning, to put this into perspective of what we're saying now. This is Peter saying, take our flagship Bouchard Finlayson Galpin Peak Pinot Noir. For example, the cultivar is like opera. When it's great, it's pure seduction, almost hedonistic. There is no middle road. So also that means we have to spend a bit on a decent Pinot Noir.
Yeah, sure, most times, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is it, and this business of it being sort of not quite a red wine and certainly not a white wine makes it difficult sometimes to compare with food, doesn't it, to go with
food? It actually goes very well with nearly a very wide cross-section of foods. In fact, you can one of its most successful pairings is with salmon.
Really?
Salmon works very well. So it's not bad company it's not very specific in terms of its food requirement. One of the most important things when enjoying wine with food is to ensure that your food has no sweetness to it, or it's not over spicy. And I often have Pinot Noir with fish, or even on Christmas Day with a leg of lamb.
I was going to say,
cook your leg of lamb in a really good Chardonnay and drink it with and share it and eat it with a good Pinot Noir.
What a brilliant idea!
Yeah.
I thought whenever I think of lamb and I want to choose a wine, I always think I should choose a Pinot Noir for some reason. And then the actual taste, Peter, what do you look for? What when you're tasting a Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir is less obvious in flavor description than you would have in a Cabernet Sauvignon or Shiraz. The smell of Pinot Noir is often ascribed to forest floor, and tastes are given as black fruits of the forest. So it can be sour cherry-like, it can be plummy at times, etc. But it's relatively neutral in that respect, but very recognizable, gamey.
Gamey, that's
yes,
the word.
Yes,
that's, there you
yeah,
are.
Yeah.
You've hit the nail on the head. That's what gamey. And does it have quite a high alcohol content, Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir will normally have a good alcohol content of probably 13.5% to 14%, yes.
Okay,
right. If you pick it too early, it tends to be metallic, yeah.
Okay. Peter, let's have another piece of music while we let our taste buds sample. The Fantasy Impromptu by Chopin, this famous piano piece.
It's one of those pop tunes of the classic world.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, as is my last choice.
Okay,
but it's just a beautiful piece of music, and I have listened to particularly Christopher Dagen playing this piece and also the next piece, and they've really stuck in my mind. So I mean, if I needed to have brought any cliched request to this show, it would be the last two.
Okay, well, why not? It's your show, music-wise.
Yeah.
And you'll be pleased to know we've got Christopher Dagen playing this for you, so how about that?
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you.
The Fantasy Impromptu by Chopin, played there by Christopher Daigen. And Peter Finlayson is my guest, talking about Pinot Noir, among other things, as well as Bouchard Finlayson and the valleys down there in Hüblenader. But, Peter, you said that Chris Daigen has been to Bouchard Finlayson and played for you there as well.
He's played at Bouchard Finlayson, if I stand correction, but I think at least 15 times.
Good grief.
He's done our Christmas concert every year in a row, which is a wonderful event. And sometimes solo, sometimes with a guest artist as well, yes.
He's an outstanding pianist, actually. He really, really is. Yeah. And in fact, he's just done a Chopin recital here in Cape Town, which was hugely popular at Constantia Christchurch.
Yeah, no, Christopher's been a good friend as well, and he's been very patient with me, encouraging me to sing.
I want to ask you about Peter, although I was going to spring it on you. It says here, Peter recently took part in the Overberg Music Group's Passionately Porter, an evening of Cole Porter music hosted by Hermanus Rotary. Did you sing? Are you now singing? Have you added another string to your bow?
About 2 years ago, there was a request for people to audition for a group led by Lona Stoffberg. And she's a master's in music and plays piano and organ in Hermanus. And I said, no, I'm not really interested. But the Friday before the last audition, somebody phoned me and said, Peter, won't you go along? And I said, all right, I'll go along, etc. And I got the thumbs up to join three other male voices and four female voices. And we've had a lot of fun since then. And I've got to congratulate, first of all, Christopher for originally breaking some of the ice and my shyness in coming forward. And then Lona has been really wonderful in building confidence, yeah.
But it must be a nice contrast from your work on the farm with Pinot Noir and with all the chemicals and chemistry.
I always say that singing is a release. And the modern society, I think, doesn't appreciate this. So you get a lot of soul energy when you're singing, and that is something which I really enjoy entertaining myself with at this stage of life. The last time I'd sung before this was in 1986, when we put on a performance of Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in Hermanus. Over an Easter weekend, we did six performances, and so for 30 years I didn't sing. Yeah.
Now it's come back. Peter, talking about Hermanus, as we have been, do you ever get involved with the Hermanus Fine Arts Festival? Because there's so many aspects to that festival.
Well, at Bouchard Finlayson, we do a competition called a Tondo competition, which is around art, which is to the size that fits on the end of a barrel. So if you visit us this week in our cellar in Hermanus, you will see this wonderful exhibition, which is probably unique any in the world.
Okay.
And that is the contribution of Bouchard. It does a sponsorship, it gives a prize winner, and then my wife is also an artist, and she's a jewelry maker by training at Stellenbosch University, but her first love is actually painting, so she has a little studio in Hermanus.
And does she exhibit at the festival as well?
Well, her studio is open during the festival, yeah.
And Peter, I'm finding out all these other things about you now, not Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Do you play an instrument at all?
No. I was one of those children at school that found piano lessons irritating after a while. Yeah, and I regret today, but that's a normal course of events,
absolutely.
But I have a very good friend in Eric Rycroft, who was actually best man at my wedding, and he played in his little quartet at my wedding. So I always had this close association with classical music, and when we were at school, Eric and I were supposed to sing together some event. He was in the orchestra below, and when the moment came for us to sing, he just sat there and laughed at me.
And you had to do it on your own.
I had to do it on my own.
Well, that gets you out of your shell as well.
Yeah.
And to relax, Peter, you listen to some music. Do you enjoy walking, cooking?
Walking every morning. I try and walk 5 kilometers every morning. It's important to keep the old legs going. And then cooking I enjoy. I'm listening to music. Photography, I enjoy wildlife photography. Getting out in the bush is something I try and do about 3 times a year.
the bush is your thing, clearly.
Yeah, it's a great privilege in this part of the world.
Just before we say goodbye to you and play your last piece of music, how many Pinot Noirs does Bouchot Finissen make? It speaks here of the Galpin Peak. Do you have various Pinot Noirs?
We have a cameo selection, which is the winemaker's privilege to take the best barrels, and that we bottle as a wine called Tête de Cuvée, Tête meaning the head selection, and that's not produced every year, but that is that little
the sort of special
parcel, yeah,
of the Pinot Noirs. Mm. And they are available, aren't they, your Pinot Noirs, in most bottle stores?
Sure.
I think we have to go and get one and sample it. After the, you've whet my appetite, certainly, to taste some of this Pinot Noir, something different. So what about your last piece of music, Christopher Daigen playing Liszt's La Campanella?
Yeah, Christopher Daigen played a series of Liszt recordings in December at our Christmas concert, and La Campanella was the cherry on top. It's, again, another favorite, and if one, again, one says that you don't have the joy of pop music in classics, well, I got you wrong, yeah.
Okay, Peter Finlayson, thank you very much as we listen to Chris Daigen playing La Campanella, and I'm looking forward to tasting some of your Pinot Noir. Thank you, Peter.
You're most welcome. Excellent, thank you. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
They became the voice of a generation with hits like Cecilia, Mrs. Robinson, Graceland, and so many more. Now relive the memories at Theatre on the Bay from the 31st of July until the 17th of August with Here's to You, the Simon & Garfunkel songbook. Expect all the hits with an 8-piece band that blends nostalgia and imagination. Don't miss Here's to You from the 31st of July until the 17th of August, only at Theatre on the Bay. Book now.